I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Mark Mathios. Mark is the principal of Ace Apparel. This is a third-generation business that was founded in 1938 by Mark's grandfather, Morris. Ace provides apparel with custom corporate logos. They are a team of branding specialists dedicated to helping their clients look great in their marketplace. All apparel manufacturing, embroidery, and screen printing are done on-site at their New York City factory. Ace Apparel has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Enterprise Report, Smart CEO, and CUNY Television, among other publications and media. Mark, it's great to have you on Smashing the Plateau. Welcome.
Hi, David. Great to be here.
And I also want to make a shout out to Rochelle Listener, our mutual friend from Dynamic Business Growth, who has made this interview possible.
Yes, it was a great introduction. Thank you, Rochelle.
So, Mark, tell us a little bit about your business's history and your own background, because it's a really fascinating story.
The business started in 1938, and my grandfather, Morris, was manufacturing canvas drop cloths to the paint trade. He was selling retail paint stores in the greater New York area. And that business, as it was, is exactly what it is today. We, in fact, work in the same room that my grandfather was working in. It's a wonderful feeling to be working within the walls where my grandfather cut and sewed fabric. My father came into the business as the second generation and added a line of painter pants. Those are the white painter pants with two loops and pockets that industrial painters wear, and those are also sold through a network of independent paint stores, and now we're selling them throughout North America. In the third generation, my brothers and I have two brothers that I work with, started a line of branded apparel, and that would be screen-printed t-shirts and embroidered polo shirts and other apparel. We started at first selling these items to paint stores for their uniform apparel and also for t-shirts that they would give away to their contractors. But we started scratching our head and saying, you know, we can go into lots of other industries, which we have, and with this new line of apparel, this branded line of apparel. So it's been very, very exciting getting into a totally new area of industry, really widened our scope in what type of customer we can go after, and as such has increased, you know, our revenue and our capabilities, David.
Mark, there's so many things that set your business apart from other businesses that I'm not even sure where to start, but I want to touch on a few points. First of all, you're a third-generation business, right? There's a 13% success rate for third-generation businesses, and it sounds like you guys are doing great work and quite successful. You are a manufacturing company at a time when more and more manufacturing is leaving the United States, let alone leaving New York City. There's very little manufacturing that still takes place in New York City, and you're working in the same room where your grandfather worked. All aspects of a business that really set you apart, and I think many other kinds of businesses, not necessarily in your particular industry, but many similar kinds of businesses would struggle to be successful under the same conditions.
I agree. I didn't know the percentage of 13%, but I do agree that it's hard to go from one generation to the next. One of the things that I would say would be a reason, or some of the reasons why we've made it successfully into the third generation and are growing, is that, and these are just off the top of my head, but One is that my father gave us the ability to bring the business to another level. So he's not held us back. He was not a dominant force in the decision making. He allowed us to go into new areas, and in fact was supportive of it. So whenever we needed to make a capital investment in the business, it might be buying a screen printing machine or investing in creating the real estate to house the new manufacturing machinery, he was always 100% behind growth and growth in general. So he gave us the freedom to grow. The other thing I would say is that each brother at this point has a very, very specific role in the business. So myself, I'm on the marketing and sales end of the business, whereas my middle brother, Adam, is in the manufacturing and operations end of the business. And my youngest brother, David, has more of a hybrid role, both sales and operations. So we all have our own, you know, worlds of responsibility, and it lends itself to us using our greatest skills, which I'm a huge believer of, that, you know, if you're operating in a world in which you are doing something that you're best at, doing your highest capability within the business, that will add to the success of what you're doing and the business as a whole.
Well, Mark, you just mentioned two aspects that I have heard from many other podcast guests that foster entrepreneurial success and great leadership. One is enabling other people who are on your team, you know, particularly your father, letting you and your brothers, other people on your team who are in subordinate roles, letting them make decisions that incur some risk on behalf of the company, and letting them go with it, letting them make decisions that have the potential to be quite successful, but there's risk involved. So that's one. The second one is playing to your strengths and realizing that if you're in a leadership role, you can't do everything yourself, and you have certain skill sets that are really great, but there are other people who may have better skill sets in other areas, and creating a diverse team to lead the company is really a tremendous benefit.
I agree wholeheartedly. If you let your staff try and fail or try and succeed, depending on your reaction to the failure, they will try again and again, and especially when there's success, when they try and do something without involving you in the decision, they have more and more confidence to keep doing it, and you can't do it all.
So let's talk about what you just mentioned, which is your reaction when you give somebody else the reins and let them take a step that might incur failure. How do you react when somebody else does something that ends up costing the company money?
Well, hopefully you have the systems in place where basic mistakes are not happening in your process. And that's, you know, I mean, that's, you know, fairly basic. You want to have the systems in place that things flow through the manufacturing line or any system line that delivers you the end product that your company provides, and it's done in a way where there are not mistakes and it doesn't cost you money on the back end. But if you have a mindset that we all make mistakes, because I certainly make mistakes, and if a mistake is made, you look at the process and why it happened, and try and not allow it to happen again through system change. That's a positive. And the other thing is that if a mistake does happen strictly based on a subjective decision, meaning an employee makes a decision based on what they think is right or wrong, nothing to do with system, you have to allow them to make that mistake and talk about why it failed, and maybe that could change their mindset so that it in a subjective case again, they're not making, or they can use that experience so that not it's not a mistake again. When it's an objective situation where you have a system that was there was a failure, then that's something you as a company need to address.
Mark, are you willing to share a story or an anecdote about success and failure involving other members of your team that have either not worked out so well or maybe resulted in a what looked like something that wasn't going to work so well and then turned out to result in success?
Sure. Our team, we hired a salesman, for example, that promised the world, had the absolutely terrific personality. We thought that he would be a great success and benefit to the business, and he did not work out well for us. He did not practice constantly mining, getting new customers and making appointments. Just the basic things you need to do to grow sales, which is just going out there and trying. And we did not create a metric in which to measure his activities. And if we had created that metric, now this is more of a objective failure, meaning that we did not have the systems in place to measure his activities in order to gauge how he would be a success or a failure. We did not measure that he was creating opportunity on a daily basis, and we should have been more on top of that. And that's part of the reason there was a failure. We just were not measuring how he was performing on a regular basis, and he was given too much free rein in that particular case.
So he may have learned from the result, and you also learned from the result of how to do things differently the next time.
100%.
Talk to me a little bit about what it's like to run a manufacturing company in New York City in 2015.
Well, we're really, really proud of what we do here. We love the idea that we're making Made in America workwear. It does get harder and harder all the time. We're fortunate that we own property in New York City, a fairly large space in New York City that we've owned for decades. And I would say that it would be much harder to operate the way we operate without having that legacy ownership. But we have absolutely terrific, working people here in the Bronx that are family people and have been with us for a very, very long time. I do believe that longevity of employee is key to having a successful manufacturing company where you're making something with consistent quality, because in manufacturing, everything is about consistency. If somebody puts something on their shelves at a retail level, or if somebody's wearing a uniform, it's got to be done the same way every time, because you just cannot have inconsistency in terms of what people expect.
Do you find that it's challenging to compete with overseas businesses?
Yes, I do. Wage scales, in terms of New York City wages, they are going up, and whereas other service companies are competing on an even playing field, we here are competing with an overseas wage scale. So if our wages, go up 30, 40, 50%, it's not like, one fast food chain is going to have to pay the same as the other fast food chain. We are competing on a worldwide basis. And if wages do go up, too much in terms of a forced wage increase, it will impact our ability to manufacture at a level that competes with the world. Another thing that we're finding is that, two decades ago, there was just a lot more diversity of customer base at the retail level. we're finding that there's just a massive grouping of companies. So like companies are larger companies are buying out a lot of smaller companies. So we're doing, you know, more business with fewer customers.
Do you find that is, you know, looking towards the future, that that's a good thing for your kind of business, or do you think that it's poses some challenges?
Well, one of the things that happened to us in the early, about 10 years ago or so, and that actually was a big promoter in us getting into the uniform business, is that we had a had been doing business for about 15 years with a large home center, and they had consumed about 50% of our production, and that was very, very dangerous. We ended up losing the business on a what's called a reverse auction, and ultimately lost the business to an overseas manufacturer. But literally within 6 months, we lost 50% of our revenue, and that was a situation where we're doing business with just one customer doing, you know, a massive amount of our production. That was very dangerous, but the silver lining was that it gave us an opportunity to stop feeding the monster, as we would call it, and be creative about changing our business. And that's how we got into the branded apparel business, and it's been blissful ever since. We don't have a single customer that makes up more than 3% of our volume. So while we are doing more business with fewer customers, we're not doing any business with any massive company. And you know, we brought our revenue back up and beyond what it was when we had that big home center.
You know, that's actually a really interesting tip. The issue of who controls your business is a really important one. This is a situation that I've come across lots of times in all kinds of businesses, when you don't control who your customers are, or let's not say the specific customers, but the type of customer. And in particular, one of the things that I often come across is businesses that end up getting, to a certain extent, controlled by customers that really aren't the best fit, but they happen to be the squeaky wheel.
True.
You know, they take up too much airspace for the business, and in relation to the amount of revenue and profit that they generate. And also, similar to your situation, if one customer ends up having a disproportionate size of your overall market, that customer can have a lot of control over your business. And you're right, it does present some risk. So you took that challenge of losing that customer and turned it into a really remarkable opportunity.
Yeah, it's incredibly exciting. And I like what you said about, you know, analyzing the type of customer that's good for you, as opposed to the customer that's making a lot of noise and creating, you know, production havocs within your operation. I like going after customers that we're very, very, we're observant about what makes a good customer here at Ace. And if we have one customer in a particular industry, let's say we do a lot of business with elevator service companies, which we do here at Ace. We do all the uniforms for those elevator service companies. What we'll do is we'll try and go after as many elevator service companies as we possibly can, knowing that they're a good fit for the way our operation works. They have a lot of employees. They order on a regular basis, numerous times throughout the year, of course, based on season. But we know what their needs are in general, and we know that, you know, we're a good fit for that industry. So I would recommend to your, you know, listening base that if you have a particular customer that you would view as a good customer for you, one that you appreciate and that appreciates the work that you do for them, I would go after more customers that are like that, and go at it, you know, wholeheartedly.
Mark, that's a great tip.
Thank you.
So obviously your company's been in business for a long time. If you could think back on a time when the company has hit a plateau, what questions do you wish you had answered at that point that you may not have known?
I guess what I would, you know, well, I'm to put it in the paradigm that you're asking about the plateau, I think some of the times when we hit plateaus is that when we're not willing to take a step, or we take a step, we know we need to take the step, but we wait till we think the timing is absolutely right. And what I would say is that if you're 80% there, just do it.
Yeah. You got to take action.
That's right. I totally agree. So, I mean, like, whether it's hiring the executive assistant that could take things off your plate, just do it.
That's great advice. Perfection is the enemy of the good.
Oh, so well said.
Mark, what do you see as some of the key ingredients for great leadership?
Well, we have three leaders here, you know, with my brother. So, we here have like these long-term employees that, as a team, help us to move forward in a very, very positive way. And, you know, people have asked me, well, why do you have employees that are there for so long? I mean, do you do like special things, like, you know, some people do employee of the month? And we really don't do any of those, like, you know, kind of crazy, you know, things to like to highlight an employee. What we do is we act normal. We don't scream and yell. We create an environment that's more like a family environment, and there's, I think, a lot of people enjoy a comfortable place to work. So if you can create comfort to your employee, you're not necessarily General Patton that, you know, has a silver helmet and a ivory handled pistol. What you are is that you're a normal human being that treats them like another normal human being. And I think that people truly appreciate that.
It's great advice. Great advice. So, Mark, as I mentioned earlier, you've overcome the odds to make it to the third generation. Tell us a little bit of how family dynamics play into leadership and management of a family business.
Well, they certainly play into it. I mean, everything that I brought and my brothers have or brought from our childhood is brought into the business. And it's a good thing. And, you know, it's a stressful thing at times. So I'm the oldest brother. And, you know, sometimes when I'm bringing back a request, and again, just to remind you all, I'm on the marketing and sales end of the business. So I bring an idea that's coming directly from a customer or directly from the marketplace, something that I've heard in the marketplace that requires a change in our business. Sometimes, although what I just said is true, that I'm bringing in something from the marketplace, it's viewed by one of my brothers as, you know, the older brother telling the other younger brother what to do. And that family dynamic is, you just can't get around it. It's something that is just ingrained in our, in the way we operate together. So what we did is we actually went to a coach called Strategic Coach, and we would, every quarter, we would fly to Chicago and work together. And what that really did is it gave us language that we could speak to each other with. So it wasn't my language or my brother's language from an operational point of view. It was a shared language, a business language that we could all refer to, that was kind of like sacred ground because it was a third party language that none of us was espousing. It was just a way for us to talk in a way that it wasn't my language or my brother Adam's language or, you know, any of the above. So that was something that if you are a family business, I would encourage you to seek out a third party expert in an area that you're having difficulty with. because that third party can give you the language, the neutral language, to talk with your family members in a way that is not viewed as your opinion or their opinion. It's neutral language that you can refer to get through, or to use your terms, David, to break through a plateau, because the plateau is you have to break through basically by, you know, getting through that family dynamic.
Interesting. So speaking of outside experts, I wondered if you could mention speaking of outside experts, I wonder if you could mention one or two that have been pivotal in your career and your family business.
Sure. So I had mentioned Strategic Coach, which is a program in which every quarter you go to their facility, whether it's in Chicago or Toronto, and we worked we're a team. We're three brothers, so we worked together over a full business day to learn that common language. I'm on the sales side of the business, and then, by the way, I'm the owner of Strategic Coach is Dan Sullivan, and he runs a fabulous program. I'm on the sales side of my business, and I think one of the great sales minds is Jack Daly. He's just he speaks from a tactical point of view in terms of acquiring customers, and he also speaks from a sales management point of view in terms of managing a sales team. And I think that his viewpoints and knowledge have been instrumental in me being a better sales manager and sales acquisition person.
Yeah, Jack Daly is certainly a well sought after sales trainer and coach, and he is an upcoming guest on this podcast, Smashing the Plateau. Oh,
terrific.
Why don't you tell us a little bit, Mark, about some of the things you're working on now?
Okay, so I belong to a business networking group called Executives Association of New York, and it's a group of about 75 business owners that was founded in 1931. We have some members through second generation that have been in the group for 40 years or more. And what we're working on now is an awards program that celebrates great deals and deal makers in New York City. It's called the Deals with Distinction. It's going to be on May 20th. And we are really, really excited to recognize great businesses in the New York City area. And it's going to be over 550 business folks at the Capitale. And it's just going to be a great, great event.
That sounds awesome.
It really is. And the group in general has been absolutely terrific for me. You know, I have this group, which is, the mission is basically to increase revenue through the trusted relationships we have in each of our own marketplaces. So that would be like introductions to companies that can buy my product using the relationship of another member. And there are also 70 really, really smart business owners that can give you advice on making your business more efficient, run better. You know, I just hired a new salesperson, and I spoke to three different execs members on an array of different things, on how to compensate them, how, you know, best to, you know, internalize them in the corporation and make them a valuable part of the team. I mean, there's the advice, in addition to the relationships and the introductions that you get to grow your business on the revenue side, you get a tremendous amount of advice from very, very smart, established business owners. So it's just been for me personally, it's been a terrific ride being in that group.
That sounds great. And I wonder if you could mention someone you know personally who's currently doing remarkable work.
Okay, so one of a company that I'm working with, and in fact became a finalist in this Deals of Distinction, is a not-for-profit called New York Junior Tennis and Learning. And what they do, well, what they're doing now is they've just broken ground on a state-of-the-art facility in Crotona Park in the Bronx, which is right around the corner from our factory. And they're building a state-of-the-art tennis facility with classrooms and places where children of need will learn to play tennis and be athletic and strengthen their bodies, but also strengthen their mind as well, where they're taught life skills like eating well and showing up on time and learning how to use organizational skills to do better at school. So it's a multifaceted approach to improve the lives of inner city children through both athletics and habits. And I'm really excited to be involved in that organization. And it's really absolutely terrific. And it's the New York Junior Tennis and Learning Organization.
Sounds like a great program.
It is.
Mark, please tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
Well, we are Ace Apparel. And I guess if you'd want to know more about me, our web address is www.ace-promo.com. We provide branded apparel with custom corporate logos. So any company that has a team of employees that they want them to look great in the field, we can help you do that.
Great. Thank you. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Mark Matthews, principal of Ace Apparel. Thank you again, Mark, for joining us.
It was my pleasure, David. It was great.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.